You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. What would happen if world temperatures jumped 5 degrees centigrade, 9 degrees Fahrenheit, in just 13 years? Impossible, says mainstream science. But a new paper published this September in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences shows a rapid wild heating event struck before on this planet 55 million years ago. Could it happen again? Our guest, Dr. Morgan F. Schaller, is from the Wright Labs at the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Along with James Wright, Morgan is co-author of the paper, Evidence for a Rapid Release of Carbon at the Paleocene-Eocene Thermal Maximum. Morgan Schaller, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me on here.
Well, it's good that you called. Thank you. Let's start with this. Briefly, what is the Paleocene-Eocene Thermal Maximum, or PETM?
So this is an event at the Paleocene-Eocene boundary, which is just a geologic boundary that corresponds to a massive increase in atmospheric CO2, along with about a 5 degrees C global warming. And it really wasn't very well understood how fast this thing occurred, but I think we put some numbers on it now in this new paper.
So how would you characterize the importance of the discovery made by your team?
It's definitely very important to this particular, to the circumstances of this particular event, and it definitely has implications for what we're doing today and maybe the rate of carbon release that we're doing today.
Well, how did you and James Wright uncover this ancient heat signal?
These are a series of sediment cores where we made this discovery, and these are basically long cylinders of muds and silts from the coastal plain, on the Atlantic coastal plain. And Jim Wright was helping a colleague process these cores, split them in their two halves. And what he noticed was that there were these really remarkably rhythmic couplets in this particular clay unit that contains this PETM event, this massive carbon perturbation event. And when he sort of called me over and showed them to me, I said, you know, really, these have got to mean something. And as geologists, whenever we see features like that, we sort of start looking for mechanisms that can account for them. And in this case, we made some oxygen isotope measurements that tell you something about temperature changes. And we found that in the stuff preserved within each one of these little clay cycles, about 2 centimeter thick clay cycles, there was a temperature cycle associated with each one. And for a variety of reasons, we concluded that each clay couplet represents an annual depositional cycle. So if these cycles are due to the seasonal climate cycle on the continental shelf, then the carbon isotope excursion and that's that massive release of CO2 to the atmosphere that is recorded by those sediments, we now have a very accurate timescale through the release of that carbon. So, and what we found was that the CO2 was released nearly instantaneously. It appears to be within one of these clay couplets, or about 1 year. And then over a series of about a decade, the surface waters, the ocean surface waters went acidic, and there was about a 5 degrees C warming.
And you calculated, it says, that it would take about 3,000 gigatons of carbon to create this massive heating event. That sounds close to what I've seen as the mass of carbon in the atmosphere right now. What could have caused such a huge, fast carbon burst?
The mass of carbon that was really roughly about 3,000 gigatons. And at the time, there would have been about 2,000 gigatons in the atmosphere. Our atmosphere today has about 800 gigatons of carbon, a little bit less than that. So they are a little bit different. But the possible triggers for this event in the Paleocene, I mean, there have been a whole lot of causes sort of tossed out there. But as it stands, the very best explanation for this carbon release is a comet impact. And there is some evidence in these sediments and other places that there was, in fact, some kind of impact at this time.
It had to happen really, really fast for what you found, yeah.
Yeah, and we can exclude things like methane that has something like a 10-year residence time in the atmosphere, things like that.
And what do we know about what happened on Earth during and immediately after such a steep temperature change? Were there extinctions, changes in ecosystems, changes in the oceans? Do we know what happened?
We have a fairly good idea of, I mean, sort of the global picture of what happened after this event. I mean, we know that at least in the oceans, there was about a 5 degrees C change in temperature, increase in temperature. And that was most certainly global. But there were no really significant extinctions. Some bottom water living organisms had a tough time, but that's about it. But after this massive release of carbon, there is evidence for acidification of the oceans. And there's evidence from ocean sediments and from a variety of other means that there was an acidification coincident with the global warming. And we do know that there were changes in temperature and humidity on land, specifically in the continental interiors. Things seemed to get drier, and maybe on the coast, things got a lot wetter. Some of those specific effects are not very clear.
I did read one article that the Smithsonian was doing research in Wyoming where they found that plants had moved up, so that they had plants there that you might have found in a South Carolina swamp for a while after this PETM event.
Right. And they moved up. I think they moved both northward and up in altitude. Presumably that is a response to an increase in temperature. So there are some pretty clear responses to things on land during this time. We know that there was a significant aridification. And that's a great section out in Wyoming that shows some of the best evidence of changes on land concurrent with this event.
Well, let's talk about how this Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum carbon release would compare to what humans are emitting now. Can you tell us that?
Sure. What we're doing now, well, first, what we found is that the carbon release at this event was much faster than what we're doing now. Previous estimates on the rates really were all over the place and not very precise. And for that reason, it was used as an analog for what we're doing today. But what we've shown is that it was much faster than what we're doing today by a long shot. But a not insignificant finding is that we've really confirmed that there is a positive temperature response to a CO2 release. And what we've done, what happened in this event was something like a 2.5 times increase in CO2 in the atmosphere. So, you know, a little bit over a doubling, maybe a doubling and a half, which resulted in about 5 degrees C of global warming. And that's been demonstrated numerous times. We've done a good job confirming that this massive release, a single release, did coincide with a big increase in temperature, which is significant. But with a single fast release scenario like this, it actually makes things quite simple to understand. And that's because we've added the carbon to the atmosphere in an almost instantaneous way, whereas what we're doing now is extremely slow. Well, not extremely slow, but relatively slow compared to an instantaneous perturbation. I was searching for the right analogy for this, why this might be significant, but you can think of this like a little kid jumping in a mud puddle. If he jumps directly into the water, all the water goes flying out of the mud puddle, and if he hops out immediately, he doesn't get very wet. However, if he sort of walks slowly into the mud puddle, all the water has time to absorb into his shoes and his socks and soak up his pant legs, and he'll get completely drenched. So what we're doing now is releasing carbon at a rate of something like 8 gigatons per year, which is equivalent to walking very slowly into that puddle. If we compare that to the PETM, we were releasing something like 3,000 gigatons almost within 1 year. So very different rates.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, talking about new science on a rapid warming of the Earth 55 million years ago and what it might mean for our future. Our guest is Dr. Morgan Schaller from Rutgers University. Well, the Earth was a different place at that time. The continents were different. Antarctica, I believe, was attached to South America, was it not? So could you talk a little bit more about the similarities and differences from those times to now?
Sure. I think one of the biggest differences between then and now, at least from a climate perspective, was that now we have a substantial amount of ice on the continents, you know, Greenland, Antarctica. Whereas during the Eocene, this is 56 million years ago, there was hardly any ice on the continents at all. So that in itself makes the response of the climate system to any kind of perturbation very different. So, for example, if we were to release this amount of carbon that we're suggesting happened at the PETM within a year now, we would probably see a pretty dramatic response from the ice sheets, an increase in sea level and that kind of thing. Whereas during the Eocene, that effect would not have been in place. And there are other things along those lines that are a little bit different. Continental configurations were obviously a little bit different. Ocean circulation was a little bit different. But by and large, things were actually pretty similar to what they are today. It was just substantially warmer on land and in the oceans overall before the event.
So the ice, I would think, would act a little bit like a set of brakes on a car compared to what they had then. Would I be right in that?
Sort of. The ice would be a big player, for sure. Ice causes changes in the climate system that, like albedo and things like that, that is reflecting coming radiation back out to space that would not have been in play during the PETM. So there are some estimates that say at the PETM, we would actually expect to see a little bit more warming per doubling of CO2 than we would observe now because of the reflectance that the ice sheets are causing during current times. But the analogy is a little bit more difficult because this was released so quickly at this event.
For this new paper, you had Wallace Broker, Wally Broker, the person who popularized the term global warming, as the editor. How was it working with the man called the Dean of Climate Science?
I mean, he's a great guy and really, really has an eye for separating those truly significant observations from the less meaningful ones. When we gave this talk at Columbia, he immediately recognized the potential significance of these findings, which was really sort of a breath of fresh air because it's met some resistance from some people that are a little more entrenched in a different way of thinking. And he also sort of immediately recognized that this piece of work needed to be evaluated in peer review by highly qualified people who simply have no career investment in this event to remove the possibility of bias, which was really, that was an amazing extension of himself there.
Is that talk at Columbia available anywhere online, or was it recorded?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Now, Morgan Schaller, what are other scientists saying about this discovery? Have doubts been expressed?
Sure, and there will always be skepticism, and I take that as a very good thing. It's healthy, and I would be concerned if there was no skepticism around our findings. But really, the most people without any attachment to this event, you know, that haven't spent a significant amount of their career looking at this thing, see our results as sort of a breath of fresh air. Now we can start to learn some more things from what happened 55 million years ago. And most of the real vocal people against this idea, or at least that express severe doubts about this finding, have sort of an academic career investment in other scenarios.
Well, one of my concerns would be climate models. I wonder if they could pick up such a rapid event in the past, and if not, could they pick up a rapid climate shift in the future? So are these climate theories and models going to have to be adjusted, do you think?
Two things actually in there. First of all, I don't think any climate model would ever be able to predict this event. If it indeed was due to a comet, which, you know, that certainly has not been settled, but if that were the case, a climate model would never be able to predict something like that. And I don't think that any model would be able to predict such a rapid change using normal climate dynamics ever. But if you prescribe such a rapid change, the models do a very good job of describing the response of each individual system to that increase in CO2. And what we've done in this paper actually, it really helps out some of those models because now they have a very precise timescale of the carbon released. So whereas before they had to use a range of timescales and it was really unclear how fast this event happened. But there's a lot of work with these models that show pretty convincingly that there's a 100,000 year sort of fall off response to, or 200,000 year or so fall off response of this CO2 perturbation working its way through all of Earth's exchangeable carbon reservoirs. And a lot of that science is going to remain basically unchanged. If anything, it'll be much more precise now that we know exactly how quickly this thing happened.
Morgan, will you be doing follow-up research, and are you working on a new project?
Oh, I've got several things going on now, but I'm looking at the next kind of thing on the docket is to look at ocean acidification as recorded by corals. And specifically, I'm going to be looking at what's happening at this event. Across a couple coral sequences. Corals are surface water animals that also have a photosynthetic guy living with them, and they show very profound responses to ocean acidification as well as ocean warming. So it would be really interesting to get a good handle on the exact chemical, ocean chemistry changes that are recorded within corals that survive through this event. That's one direction I'm really pushing hard on right now.
What is the takeaway for listeners about what this discovery says about the possibility of a rapid climate shift triggered by our own emissions?
Well, in some ways, this event has always been an imperfect analogy to what we're doing now. Certainly, if a rapid release of carbon, like the scenario for the PETM, were to happen today, the consequences would be very different. There would probably be a very profound response from the glaciers and from ice sheets, which means there would probably be a pretty rapid increase in sea levels and things like that. But in the Eocene, there was no substantial ice on land, so we don't really have an analogy for those effects. But what we have done is shown that there is an unequivocal temperature response to a little over a doubling of atmospheric CO2. And we've added a very precise timescale to those observations. So, like I said, the PETM was much faster, and what we're doing now is about 8 gigatons of carbon per year versus at the PETM, you know, we're looking at something like 3,000 gigatons per year. So I think there are a lot of things we can learn from this event that are potentially in our future, but I think what we're doing right now may in some ways be a little more dangerous because we're releasing carbon at such a rate that all those slower acting carbon reservoirs exchange on much longer timescales. We're releasing carbon so that those reservoirs can become active and absorb this perturbation that we're creating in a much more equilibrium way, such that we're sort of fundamentally shifting our climate state, whereas at the PETM, we basically immediately perturbed an already equilibrium climate state, which is a very different thing. So if we go back to the analogy of a kid jumping in a puddle, what we're doing right now is essentially as if we were walking very slowly into that puddle and the water is able to absorb into all of the active water-absorbing reservoirs on our body, which would be analogous to those carbon reservoirs. Whereas if we do this thing extremely quickly, like we're suggesting nearly instantaneously, as happened at the PETM, it has much less long-term permanent effects, at least I would argue.
You've been listening to Dr. Morgan F. Schaller from the Wright Labs at Rutgers University in New Jersey. We've been discussing his new co-authored paper, Evidence for a Rapid Release of Carbon at the Paleocene-Eocene Thermal Maximum. It reveals a rapid increase in global temperature in just 13 years. Morgan, thank you for contributing your work and time to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith. I need to add this little note about numbers. In this interview, Dr. Schaller uses figures of elemental carbon emissions of all types emitted by humans and in the atmosphere rather than carbon dioxide only. For example, while I was correct in estimating the current mass of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere at around 3,000 gigatons, Schaller sees that as 800 gigatons of elemental carbon, which is also correct. We emit around 30 gigatons of carbon dioxide a year, but scientists consider this as elemental mass of about 8 gigatons. There is no conflict in these numbers, but a different language and perspective. Please see my detailed notes in the Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.info, published every Wednesday.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.